characters into festivals and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx. A man arrived late from concert at the upper hall during the Edinburgh Festival and had some difficulty finding his seat. An angry voice behind shouted, "Sit down in the front!" He said, "I can't, I don't bend that way."
How did your new Fringe production go?
Well, it got sort of mixed notices.
Mixed?
Yes, we liked it, but the critics didn't. The Fringe Theatre was doing a production of a Victorian melodrama, and the first night wasn't very well attended. The climax arrived. The villain dragged the heroine to the footlights and hissed, "Are we alone?" A voice in the back said, "No, but you will be tomorrow night." The manager of a rather grand touring company sent a telegram to the proprietor of a hall they were to use for a drama festival. It said, "Arriving tomorrow, rehearsal 3 p.m., have stage manager, stage carpenter, props man, chief electrician, and stagehand standing by." We received a reply later that day. It read, "All right, I'll be there." There was a bass player in the orchestra pit of the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden. He hadn't taken a day off for 25 years. He was a real solid worker. On the weekends, he used to do sessions on gramophone records, refused to take time off. Well, a new conductor joined the Opera House and said, "This man's been overworking. I insist he takes a day off." He said, "You've got Saturday off." The poor chap didn't know what to do with it. His mate on the other double bass said, "What do you do, starting?" "I'll go out front and watch the show." He said, "You're joking." He said, "Yeah, I'll go out there." Anyway, he went out, came back after the show, and his mate was packing up his double bass. He said, "Do you like it?" He said, "It's fantastic." "And we're down there in the pit." "You know, the second act, bar 48, and we're playing boom, 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 boom." He said, "Yeah." "He landed the people on stage singing, Toreadona."
In spite of Alfred's jokes, the festival should be a joyous occasion of celebration. And there are many events that it could celebrate. Here's a definition of festivals by J.B. Morton.
Festival: A, 1 week's cricket at Scarborough. B, 1 month's Wagner at Bayreuth.
Well, it's more the second sort that we'll be looking at in this program, the art festival, of which the most famous must be this one we're at here in Edinburgh. An arts festival should be a splendid celebration of all the different media, with contributions ranging from the establishment art of international opera to the wildest experimental excesses of fringe drama. Perhaps I could define the Edinburgh Festival as the worry with a fringe on the top. Many exciting talents have been discovered in the unlikeliest church halls at art festivals. It's not the venue that matters, it's the people in it. Woody Allen.
I was appearing in Greenwich Village at a coffee house on Bleecker Street called the Integration Bagel Shop and Free Club. I was the master of ceremonies on the bill, you know. I was on with weird Greenwich Village acts, you know, myself and an Eskimo vocalist who sang night and day 6 months at a time. A little blonde girl had a child by a future marriage, you know. And in walks one night a Mr. Feldman, a producer, and he just adored me on sight. He thought I was attractive and sensual and good looking, you know, and just made for motion pictures. He's a little short man with red hair and glasses.
Woody Allen, of course. It's not only new performers that have a shop window in a setting like a festival, but also the opportunity for new writing and composition to be heard. New works are sometimes specially commissioned for festivals and often get their first hearings there. And sometimes a new work will get the honour of virtuoso performance. Though some virtuosi are less than keen on new works. Yes, Your Highness.
I occasionally play works by contemporary composers, and for two reasons. First, to discourage the composer from writing anymore. And secondly, to remind myself how much I appreciate Beethoven.
Performance of new works by amateurs is also a risk as demonstrated in this newspaper review.
Miss Loth sang a new song cycle while the orchestra played a selection of Viennese waltzes. But a work doesn't necessarily have to be written recently to have its first performance.
And now we welcome you to the Memorial Hall, where we are broadcasting the first performance of a recently discovered fragment by the Bavarian composer Heinrich Danfisch. Danfisch was born at Erlsbrücke in 1886, April 1909, and was written while he was on a holiday at Baselstein. The soloist tonight is Sorrel Brush, born in Danfisch in 1926, when the composer was 40 years old, 31 years before his death in 1957, at the age of 71, and 17 years after the composition of this fragment in 1909, at Baselstein. And Miss Brush later went to the Cockfostel School of Music in 1947. 21 years later, at the age of 22, and as far as we know, she is still alive. Her accompanist tonight is Terruccio Brangani, born in Cockfostel in 1927. When the composer was 41 and the soloist was 9 months old, 18 years after the composition of this fragment in 1909 at Baselstein, and 39 years before it is being performed tonight in the Memorial Hall, which was built in 1950, 16 years ago, 64 years after the composer was born, 34 years after the soloist was born, when Dino Brangani was 33, and 2 years before my first wedding anniversary. The man selling the tickets is Albert Buttermose, born in 1904, who arrived here yesterday. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for from tonight's concert, so I'll return you back to the studio. Good night.
Lovely piece written and performed by John Gould from his LP, 4 Degrees Over. At many festivals, the showpieces of the official program are the concerts. People flock to hear classical music played by the world's most skilled exponents. Either the very young, as in this definition by J.B. Morton.
Prodigy, the child who plays the piano when he ought to be asleep in bed.
Or the slightly older, like Victor Borge.
Time permits, I would like to squeeze in the Minute Waltz by Chopin. This happens to be the first number I ever learned to play while my sister taught me the piano. She was my first teacher. She is a brilliant pianist. She has played all over the world. Piano, of course. She is supposed to be the brightest person in the family, into which she married. And she is on the radio and television or what have you. Well, some don't, but actually she is. You might be surprised to learn that she is my sister, because we do not have the same name. Her name is I've spoken to her so often. Sis. No. No, it isn't. Well, whatever it is, I will recognize her when I see her. The Minute Waltz by Chopin. And it won't take long.
He's only my half sister.
Now another Warren Spy show, man. This one in C sharp minor. Yes. Well, for the ones of you who know the waltz, you will probably also know in which key it is. For the ones of you who don't know the waltz, what difference does it make? Mr. Shepherd.
The right to say what he thinks where art's concerned. Edmond de Goncourt.
A painting in a museum. He has more ridiculous opinions than anything else in the world.
But art is a matter of taste, and that is very personal. John White.
There are three kinds of people in the world. Those who can't stand Carter, those who can't stand Raphael, and those who've never heard of either of them.
Anyway, whatever one thinks about a work of art, it's probably a million miles from the artist's original intention.
Hey, then, you Drake. Really, Michelangelo, I want to have a word with you about this Last Supper of yours. Oh, yeah? I'm not happy with it.
Oh, dear. It's your girl.
Not happy at all.
Do the jelly worry you? Oh, no, you don't like the kangaroo.
What kangaroo?
On offering, that's why.
I never saw a kangaroo.
Well, it's right at the back. But I'll paint it out, no problem. I'll make him into a disciple. All right, now.
That's the problem.
What is it?
The disciples. There are 28 of them.
John Cleese and Jonathan Lynn. At least with classical art, one has the good opinions of a few centuries to guide one's judgment. In discussions of modern art, the whole thing is much more difficult. Everywhere, there seems to be people trying to extend the traditional definitions of art. And some of the exhibits one sees in tiny galleries at art festivals make one suspect that art is being sent up. Here's an extract from an interview with an artist which appeared in the Daily Mirror.
When I put on a light show recently, projecting various things on the screen, I showed microscope pictures of Qatar. it is a way of discovery that things like Qatar are beautiful. A priest told me after seeing that projection that Qatar was like a prayer.
Modern art has always been greeted with skepticism. M. Walthall Jackson.
One reassuring thing about modern art is that things can't be as bad as they're painted.
Another part, certainly, of the Edinburgh Festival, and also of other festivals, is the cinema. Film festivals often prove vital to the development of new talent. The rigid control of distribution outlets mean that many important films get their first showings in festivals. The same is true of controversial television programs. For some groups, it is very difficult indeed to make it onto the network. From New Society.
An organization calling itself the National Association for the Abolition of Television has applied to the BBC for the use of their open door access program to appeal to viewers to switch off their sets.
Mind you, television and film festivals do offer a chance for the artistic underground to climb up the stairs to respectability. How else did figures like Andy Warhol ever get accepted? An extract from The Guardian.
There is a film a few minutes long by Andy Warhol showing a youth being given an injection in the buttocks by a girl. It isn't by any means meaningless. It is a critique of storyline, of the idea that life makes stories. It is the art of the window watcher. Yes, it's a form. It expresses a reality. There are such people, such sights are seen and have effect.
Thank you, Alfred. And sit down in Sue's corner for a moment.
A little tiny cinema in Manhattan where they just show foreign films, and I sell paintings in the lobby if you want it, you know, and they serve free Colombian coffee, you know. And the ushers are all there on Fulbright, you know, they're set to study. When I was a kid, I used to go to the movies on Saturday afternoon, and we used to watch the bouncing ball and sing by the sea or take me out to the ball game or something. And at the art movie theater, you see a group of hardcore fanatic intellectuals, bearded, silver earrings, leotards. They're watching the bouncing ball, and they're singing Gregorian chants. So I see a film by Ingmar Bergman, very Swedish and surrealistic, and with it there's a short subject called Vista Vision Visits the Faroe Islands. These are islands off Denmark and Sweden, and in Denmark and Sweden, they're very sexually progressive. They have mixed nude bathing, and they teach sex education in school. It's like a wild, swinging country. Everybody scores. You don't have to be tall. I would give the impression the American cops are going to knock on the country and say, all right, Sweden, we know what you're doing in there.
Woody Allen again, of course. Like that strange cinema, the venues in which films and stage productions will be shown during the festival are bizarre. Anywhere will do. Anywhere where there's room for the cast and the audience. And often places where there doesn't appear to be room for either. Certainly not both at the same time. If you go for an officially designated place of entertainment, you can get problems. From the Yorkshire Post.
A caretaker halted a concert last night in the middle of a Beethoven septet. The caretaker walked into the concert at Leeds Art Gallery, given by the City of Leeds College of Music, and announced, "Righto, 9:15, that's it, you can all go home."
But you have to see it from the point of view of the owner of the premises. At Edinburgh during the festival, this remark by Bill Vaughan certainly holds true.
If a farmer fills his barn with grain, he gets mice. If he leaves it empty, he gets actors.
Yes, anywhere will do for a fringe production. The art is reckoned to be more important than the comfort. Here's an anonymous lament about seating on the fringe.
In experimental theatres, I'm always losing heart and cannot always see it as just suffering for art. Ars longa vita brevis, the seating leaves its scars as you suffer ridgen crevice for hours and hours and hours.
The limitations of the hall do, of course, have an effect on the production. Let's now hear part of a dramatic offering, Look Back in Hunger, from the East Cheam Drama Festival.
The curtain rises, and we see several stagehands pushing the furniture into position. And the curtain is lowered again.
It's all right, we're ready for show, thanks.
The curtain rises on a middle-class suburban drawing room. The curtain rises on...
Hang on, the screen is gone. Stop giving the plot away and give us a pull. Oh, it's all right. It's all right. I think Fred has managed it. Yes, we're all right now. Carry on.
Thank you. And as the curtain falls right across the middle of the page, we see a middle-class suburban drawing room. Enter Mrs. Porter talking to her husband.
I don't understand, young Jimmy. He's not like a normal boy, Harold. You must talk to him, Harold. Harold, where are you?
And I need to run his curtain, get it off me.
Yes,
yeah,
you call out.
I can't see. Where are you?
What's
the
fashion about?
I'll dress you about when I get out.
Don't you talk to me like that. I should report you to the union. It's not my fault the curtain fell on you.
I'll get on with it.
We can't go out of the curtain.
And now enter the hero. 4 minutes too early to help dress the curtain.
You can both come to my office and get your cards when this is over. I've never seen such a disgraceful exhibition on a stage in all my life.
It's not our fault.
You are no trooper, sir. A real artiste would have pretended it was part of the action and carried on as though nothing had happened.
How can you carry on when a goody great velvet curtain is not on your neck? You great big-headed duck.
Big-headed duck. May I remind you that there is an audience out there who can hear every drunken word you're saying.
Oh, well, chap. I didn't want to do this acting log in the first place. I wish I'd stayed at home and watched the boxing.
What was some boxing on tonight?
Teddy Hancock, Sir James and Kenneth Williams. One subject that always seems to be raised at festivals is that of censorship. There's always some new play around that seems set to shock the sensibilities of the most broad-minded watch committee. Mind you, one wouldn't have thought there were many taboos left to break. Peter Ustinov.
By increasing the size of the keyhole, today's playwrights are in danger of doing away with the door.
But since festivals are often supported by local contributions, it's only proper that local people should take an interest in the contents of the shows which are performed. A report from the Ipswich Evening Star.
Complaints by two Felixstowe councillors have led to the dropping of Harold Pinter's play The Homecoming from the town's invitation festival of drama because it tells too much about prostitution. The festival will now open a week on Saturday with the killing of Sister George. Which deals with lesbianism.
One of the attractions of drama festivals from the point of view of writers and performers is that their work can be seen by critics of the national press. For amateurs, this possibility can be very exciting, but perhaps they just don't know much about critics. William Archer.
One of the first and most important things for a critic to learn is how to sleep undetected at the theatre.
Some reviews could make the cast wish the critic had slept through their performance. Groucho Marx.
I didn't like the play. Then I saw it under adverse conditions. The curtain was up.
And what critics say is often very difficult for the layman to understand, particularly when they're pontificating on the theatre.
Last week, London theatre goers saw the opening of Neville Shunt's latest Western success, It All Happened on the 11:20 from Hainault to Red Hill. Via Horsham and Reichage, calling at Carshalton Beaches, Marmes Bay to Geneva, and calling west. In this, as in his earlier 9 plays, Shunt attempts to express the human condition in terms of British Rail. A report now from our own theatre critic, Gavin Millar.
Some people have made the mistake of seeing Shunt's work as a load of rubbish about railway timetables, but clever people like me who talk loudly in restaurants see this as a deliberate ambiguity, a plea for understanding and a mechanized ethos. The point is frozen, the beef is dead. What is the difference? What indeed is the point? The point is frozen, the beef is laid out of Paddington. The point is taken. If La Fontaine's elk would spurn Tom Jones, the engine must be our head, the dining car, our esophagus, the guard's van, our left lung, the cattle truck, our shins, the first class compartment, the piece of skin at the base of the neck, and the level crossing, an electric elk called Simon. The curtain is devastating. But where is the ambiguity? Over there, in a box. Shunt is saying the 8:15 from Gillingham, when in reality he means the 8:13 from Gillingham. The train is the same, only the time is altered. Okay, homo, virgo, elk. La Fontaine, your sister, and you have bloody well. The point is taken, the beast is moving, the fluff gets up your nose. The illusion is complete. It is reality, the reality is illusion, and the ambiguity is the only truth. But it's the truth, as Hitchcock observed, in the box. No, there isn't room, the ambiguity has put on weight. The point is taken, the elk is dead, the beast stops at Swindon, Cheval stops at nothing. I'm having treatment, and La Fontaine can get nothing.
John Cleese, assisted earlier on in the piece by Eric Idle. For their six festivals, long may they flourish. After all, in the feverish activity that surrounds the Jeffords, there are always a few gems to be seen. Performances which elicit reviews like this one from an Indian newspaper.
This will be a show which you must not fail to miss.
I hope you've enjoyed our look at festivals. Until next time, from Alfred and me, goodbye.
Bye.
Frank Muir Goes Into Festivals was recorded at the Edinburgh Festival. It was written by Frank Muir and Simon Brett and produced by Jeffrey Perkins.